Good morning, Harmony.
Morning.
How you guys doing?
Good.
All right, so we are in our final sermon on this series, Tough Enough. And what we've been talking about through this series is, how do we deal with trials and tribulations? How do we deal with life being hard? Would everybody agree life can be hard?
Yes.
If you aren't raising your hand, it means you're young and you haven't gotten into the real life yet. Life is hard, and if you think becoming a Christian means that pain and suffering will disappear, then you haven't been a Christian for very long either. Being in this life means we will go through trials, we will go through tribulation, we will experience pain, and we will experience suffering. Now, that's not to say life is all bad. There is an unbelievable amount of blessing and gifts that God gives us every single day. And there will be moments of our lives where we look around and just feel so unbelievably blessed to have the people we have in our lives, to have the love of our Father, and to be in a place where our stress is not high. But as Christians, it's really important for us to learn, how do we deal with those tough times? Because often it's in those moments that people will really see the presence of the Lord in your life. When we think about ourselves as Christians, and when I kind of talk to people about their own lives, what I find is most people want God to transform them. Most people want God to improve them, to shape them, to build them, to make them stronger. In fact, we kind of came off of New Year's, and if you talk to most people during New Year's time, they have a resolution of some kind of personal growth or improvement. The funny thing with people is not that we don't desire to grow or improve. It's just we don't desire the pain that often comes to have that change in our lives. You know, that's why there's so many of us who join gyms but don't get skinny. It's not the gym that makes you skinny. It's the actual what? Work at the gym that gets you skinny. And so there's this thing in ourselves where we have desires, but we don't really want to sacrifice, and we don't really want to go through the tough times. I love this passage here because in Isaiah 64:8, this is one people love to use when we talk about being shaped by God. And I think the reason is look at the verbiage. It says, "But now, O Lord, you are Father, we are the clay, and you are the potter. We are all the work of your hand." What a beautiful picture, right? Have you ever watched somebody form a clay pot? It's this moldable, malleable clay. It's wet, soft, and it's spinning, and there they are just molding it with their hands, and it's this gentle, kind process. I think that's what we all wish change looked like. But really, when you think about molding the clay, let's talk about what's happening. First, that clay has to be taken, and it has to be kneaded and molded and put with water, and it needs to be brought down so that it's soft and it's malleable. And then the excess is carved away and thrown away, those parts that aren't needed. And when finally the shaping is done, what happens next? You go put it in unbelievable heat. Why? So that shaping that God has done can maintain. For me, there's always been a verse that's slightly better at describing how shaping goes, and it's this one. You typically see it related to men's Christian conferences, but this is not a man-only verse. This is for all of us. As iron sharpens iron, as one man sharpens another. And so this picture we have back on the front cover, that is iron shaping iron. Now look at that process. Does that look beautiful? Does that look gentle? Does it look soft? No, you're taking this piece of metal, bringing it up to this unbelievable heat, and then doing what? Pounding and pounding and pounding. And each time you do that, what happens? The parts that aren't needed fall off. The impurities disappear. It's a violent process. And so what's funny is a lot of us are praying for God to change us. But then we also then start to pray as soon as trials come and go, well, wait a minute, why is this going on? A lot of times, folks, those two things are connected. When you're asking God to change you, expect that there's going to be a trial that comes your way to help shape you, to help change you. And so last week, we began the process of looking through the story of Job. And so let's recap a little bit. Job is a good man who loves God. So much so, God is bragging about Job to Satan. God is talking to Satan, going, "Have you seen my man Job? If there is a man that loves me, if there is a man that obeys me, if there is a man that has faith in me, it is Job." And what Satan says is the only reason Job loves you, God, is you've given him a soft life. He's rich, he's got beautiful children, he's got a proper place in the community where he's respected, he's healthy, his life is good. That's why he loves you. But I guarantee you, if you took that stuff away from him, he wouldn't love you anymore. And so God allows Satan to go and do his worst. And so Satan decides to attack Job. Job loses his wealth, he loses his health, he loses his children, he loses the support of his wife. Remember last week, what'd she tell him? Why won't you just curse God and die? Man, if your wife's telling you that, you guys need to talk. Okay, that's not the kind of support you're looking for. Just curse God and die. And not only that, but he's also lost his position in the community. And I want to talk about this subpoint because this is important. Conventional wisdom of Job's day taught good things happen to good people. Bad things happen to bad people. So when bad things started to happen to someone, what was the response of the community in regards to that individual? Was it compassion? Not necessarily. A lot of times it was in fact that they would go, well, you deserve this. You must have been doing something to get this punishment. You must have been hiding some kind of sin. You must have been some kind of bad person to have this calamity fall upon you. And so Job goes from being someone respected because he was blessed to someone who is ignored because it looks as if he is cursed. Now there's a couple things in Job's character I want us to pay attention to. One, in the midst of all of this strife, losing his family, losing his wealth, losing his position, losing all those things, Job still honors God and refuses to curse him. And what I love about this shows that character God was talking about. Job in the good times, what did he do? He honored God. Job in the bad times, what did he do? He honored God. Brothers and sisters, you really want to know your own character or someone's character? You watch them when the tough times come. Most of us are actually pretty pleasant to be around when life's going good. When we're getting promotions, when we have lots of money, when we're healthy, when we're popular, when we're celebrating, most people aren't that bad to be around. And you know what? People flock to you. Have you ever noticed the difference of who's your friends when you're throwing a party versus when you need to move? Have you ever noticed that it's not the same number of people? Right, throw a party and go, free barbecue, free food, we're dancing, we're hanging out all night, and guess how many people will show up? Everybody, people you didn't even know. Now call the same group of people the next week and go, yeah, we've got to move me into a third story apartment. Who's signing up for that? And two people show up. And you know what you know? You know, those two are your friends, right? It's so amazing how people respond to the good and the bad that's happening. Now, Job, while still showing good character, there is one thing beginning to happen that we explored last week. Job is beginning to think that what has happened to him is a mistake. Why? Because it's so unfair. Now, I gotta be honest, I love this book because it's so real in how life works. How many times have you sat on your knees or in your room and talking about God about how unfair things are? You had those conversations? Have you ever had those moments where you're like trying to explain it to him, like maybe he's just missed something? Like, you know, I've been going to church. You know I'm a good person. You know I love you. You know I sacrifice for people. You know, you remember when I did all these things for my neighbors? Right, and you're trying to build this case of who you are, and it's like, but this, what's happening to me now, just doesn't seem right. It seems unfair, God. And that's exactly what we're starting to see creep into the mind of Job. Now what we're going to do is we're going to finish the book today, but we're going to skip around a lot because there's a lot of words being said. And so I'm going to put a little segments to give you the emotional take of both Job and his friends. So if you have your Bibles, open up to Job and look at Job chapter 6. We're going to read 2 through 4. Job 6, 2 through 4. Just keep your book open because we're going to be rolling through this thing. In Job chapter 6, this is what we hear him saying. Oh, that my vexation were weighed, and all my calamity laid in the balances. For then it would be heavier than the sand of the sea. Therefore my words have been rash. For the arrows of the Almighty are in me. My spirit drinks their poison. The terrors of God are arrayed against me. What's Job saying? He's saying, if we could just balance this out, if we would take my character and put it on one side of the balance, then we would take the calamity and the strife on the other side. We would see this is not fair. We would see this is not right. And right now, I can feel God attacking me. And I think that's a brilliant thing he says. Not because it's true, but because it's how we feel. Brothers and sisters, does God ever attack you? No. Now, does God allow the sin of this world to do damage to us? Yes. There are times in our lives where absolutely God is going to pull back his protection of us. And he's going to allow us to feel the wrath that's in this world. But brothers and sisters, here's a mistake you and I make. We think that if we're good people, good things will happen to us. Guess what, brothers and sisters? From the moment we allowed sin into this world, which was a choice that we made, we broke the planet. And when we broke it good. From the moment sin set foot in this earth, you have disease, you have sickness, you have strife, you have broken relationships, and you have murder and death and all those things that follow with it. And you know what? We see that every single day. Read the newspaper, go look at the top stories on the news, and you will see sin running wild. Now what's interesting about us is you and I, we don't mind a whole lot when sin strikes bad people. When we hear about a gangbanger getting shot in a drug deal, we go, well, you should be doing that. But all of a sudden when we hear about a drunk driver hitting an innocent high school student, what happens? We go, well, that's not fair. That's not right. That's not how it should happen. And so what's interesting is even though we are 2,000, 3,000 years from the writing of this story, guess what? We still kind of think the same way. Good things should happen to good people, and bad things should happen to bad people. But the moment we let Satan free, that was done. Because he is a destroyer out here to wreak havoc in this world. And also, sub-point that we like to acknowledge but not really acknowledge. Who in this room is a sinner? All of us. So who of us should taste the penalty of sin and death? All of us. Now what you and I like to do is what Job likes to do right here is we like to go, but I'm not that bad. You're right, I'm a sinner. I said some things I shouldn't have said when I was driving. And maybe I have a little bit of gluttony here and there. And, you know, maybe I'm a little prideful. And maybe I have this. And maybe I have that. But have you seen these people? I mean, surely if anyone here was going to get in trouble because of how they're living, it's not me. Have you seen my neighbor? My goodness, those walls are thin. You can hear everything he says to his wife. So when bad stuff happens, what we want to go is, I'm a sinner, but like little sin. There's these much worse sinners. They deserve that stuff. It's not how it works. It's not how it works. When you let poison in, when you let sin in, when you let death in, there's no containing it. There's no controlling it. It wreaks havoc. And so Job is in the middle of this going, this is unfair. I'm not this bad. And I love that he says that because every single one of us that believes in God has had that moment. You know what I love too? I love that God records it. You know why I love that he records it? Because it lets you and I know this will happen. If you have a true loving relationship with somebody, what is bound to happen? Argument. Bound to happen. I told you last week, I always get nervous when I'm counseling people who want to get married and they tell me, oh, we never fight. Never had an argument. Once I hear that, my goal is to start an argument. Okay? How can I get you two to fight? Because you need to figure out if you're good at this and if that's the person you want to argue with for the rest of your life. Okay? Because there's going to be a lot of good moments, but there's going to be a lot of arguments. You ever have those moments where you're like, how did this fight start? Can't even remember how it began? That's just what happens. And guess what? If you love God and you talk to Him every day and you're walking with Him, guess what's going to happen? Someday you're going to get mad at Him. And someday you're going to get mad at Him. You know what you're going to do? You're going to yell at Him. And you're going to say things you shouldn't say, but it's real. And we see it in Job. We see it all throughout the Psalms. We see men who are in love with God yelling at God because they don't understand what's happening. That's real. You know what? God still loves them. God understands that. Now what I want you to see here is we're going to jump forward. So where's Job? Job is in the midst of misery. This is unfair. It's not right. Man, if I could just talk to God, He would see a mistake's been made. Now Job has three buddies that are there with him. And these buddies start out doing the right thing. They show up and initially, you know what they do? They say nothing. They're just there with him. Which honestly, guys, if you ever want to talk about really powerful to be with somebody, that's normally what you do. Because guess what? There are no words when you've lost a child. There are no words when you're struck with cancer. There are no words when death has taken your friend that you can say that make the pain go away. But it sure is nice to have people near you who love you and are with you in that moment. And so these three guys show up. There's Bildad, Eliphaz, and Zophar. I always love those names, right? Can't give me Mark, Luke, and John, right? So these three guys show up, and at first they start out great. We're just going to sit with Job. Brother, we're here for you. But as what happens over time, everybody has to throw in their two cents, right? And so look at chapter 8, verse 2. Bildad jumps in, and Bildad's going to explain why these things are happening. Because he's got the answers. Isn't that so like a man? Don't ever bring a problem to a man if you're not expecting a solution to come right after. All right? You tell us a problem, we're going to tell you how to fix it, even if we don't know anything about it. So Bildad, he jumps in. Verse 2 of 8. How long will you say these things, and the words of your mouth be a great wind? Basically, what he's saying, why are you blowing hot air? Does God pervert justice? Or does the Almighty pervert the right? If your children have sinned against Him, He has delivered them into the hand of their transgression. What is he saying? He's saying you're blowing hot air. You keep saying that God's perverted justice. And let's be honest. If your children were struck dead, you know why? Because they sinned and they deserved it. So what Bildad and his friends are going to start saying to Job is, Job, on the outside, you may have been playing this game where you looked all holy and right. But what this is telling us, what the loss of your wealth and your health and your children is telling us, is that you really are a bad guy. You're really a man with lots of sin. It's the only reason God would let this happen. How do you think that feels? Dear Job, do you want to hear that? No. But let's be honest, have you ever wondered that yourself when you're in the midst of trial? Have you ever had a bad day happen and you're wondering if it's you who caused it? I brought this on myself. It's really my fault. Brothers and sisters, sometimes that's true. Sometimes you are going to reap what you sowed. And sometimes with the pain that you're facing is directly from the actions that you have caused in life. But other times, brothers and sisters, it's just life. Other times it's just life. Nobody does anything for cancer. Nobody signs up for leukemia. No one chooses those things or picks those things. It's just life. Now, the reason that Bildad and these friends hang on to this is because it makes things feel safer. If it really worked the way that bad things happen to bad people and good things happen to good people, what does that kind of give you and I the sense of? Control. Because if I could just be good, then guess what I guarantee? Good things will happen. And brothers and sisters, let me be honest. I bet you there's some people in this room that have come to church for most of their lives with that logic. I've sat in the room with people who are sick going, I go to church. Like there's some kind of connection there. Like God was about to hand out sickness, and then he looked at your card and like, oh no, they go to church, they're not going to get this one. Oh, Dave though, Dave doesn't go to church, so he can get this. That's not how it works. If you've ever thought Christianity is about paying the price, about earning goody two-shoe points, about building up a resume so God will bless you, that's not what it is. What this is it's a family who's united in love, standing together, realizing life's hard. And so why are we part of a family? Because when I go through the tough times, I want to know I got you guys at my back, and I'm not just going to carry this by myself. I'm going to know that I have other people beside me that love God, know His Word, and are going to lift me up when I can't do it myself. That's why God gave us the church. To bring Him glory and to support each other. Bildad and Zophar and Eliphaz, they're trying to say, you know what, Job, you're a bad guy. It's the only reason this happened. Look at chapter 9, verses 13 through 17. God will not turn back His anger. Beneath Him bowed the helpers of Rahab. How then can I answer Him, choosing my words with Him? Though I am in the right, I cannot answer Him. So what's this frustration that's developing in Job? He's saying, I know I'm right. I know this is unfair. I know this shouldn't be happening. But who can I talk to? How can I change this? How can I get this to go away? That frustration is setting in that he's powerless. It's not fair, but what can he do? Chapter 11, Zophar's turn to speak. So Bildad didn't get anyone through, so now Zophar's going to step up, and look what he's going to say. Verse 4 of chapter 11, for you say my doctrine is pure, and I am clean in God's eyes, but oh, that God would speak and open his lips to you, and that he would tell you the secrets of wisdom. What is he saying? You say you're clean, you say you're not hiding anything, but God knows better. Again, they're pointing to, this has to be tied to your sin, Job. Has to be tied to your sin. That's going to be their continual argument. Chapter 12, look at verse 4. Job's now talking. And again, we're seeing this despair in his life. I am a laughingstock to my friends. I who called to God and he answered me. A just and blameless man am a laughingstock. Now remember when we talked about James a few weeks ago? James talks to us about how to go through trials. Where should our focus be in the midst of trials? It should be on God and what He can teach us. Where has Job's eyes slipped to? Job is focused on the pain, the hurt, and the trial. Brothers and sisters, when we go through bad things, if all our eyes see is the bad, we are missing everything that God can give us in the midst of a trial. When you are suffering, when you're in pain, when trial comes your way, that is an opportunity to you to grow closer to God and to learn from Him. But that only happens if your eyes are open to see those things. And with Job, what's starting to happen is his eyes aren't there. He's focused on what he's lost, and he's focused on how unfair it is. That's all he can get through. Let's flip a little further. Look at 21, chapter 21, verse 2. Keep listening to my words and let this be your comfort. Bear with me and I will speak. And I have spoken, mock on. As for me, is my complaint against man? Why should I not be impatient? Look at me and be appalled and lay your hand over your mouth. When I remember, I am dismayed and shuddering seizes my flesh. Why do the wicked live, reach old age, and grow mighty in power? Their offspring are established in their presence, and their descendants before their eyes. Their houses are safe from fear, and no rod of God is upon them. Remember that actor where we compare ourselves? That's what Job's doing. Right? So now he's sitting here and going, you know what's even worse about this? Is that there's some truly evil people, and they have everything that I lost. I have been holy and I have been upright, and these wicked people have everything I desire. It's not fair. Now, brothers and sisters, we've gone from chapter 6 through 21, and what do we hear from Job still? The same thing, right? Complaint, despair, argument. Why do you think God's allowed this to continue for so long? I can only guess, but the reason I think He allows this to continue for so long is because this is how we are. Do you ever meet people who have just embraced being a victim? Not my fault. Not my fault that this happened. Not my fault that this goes this way. Not my fault that this has gone down. Not my fault that this history has occurred. And basically, they're always looking for what? A reason why it's not theirs that they are where they are. Be careful of that kind of thinking. Because guess what? There are some things in this world we cannot control. But there are some things we can. And when we become victims in life, what starts to happen is we just disengage. So that even the opportunities we do have, places that we could influence, places that we could glorify God, we stop doing it. Because we just want to blame everything on everybody else. We just want to wallow in our self-pity. Job has suffered greatly. But right now all he is doing is embracing that sadness and embracing that pain. Look at chapter 23. Then Job answered, he's responding to the arguments of his friends. Today also my complaint is bitter, my hand is heavy on account of my groaning. Oh, that I knew where I might find him. He's talking about God. That I might come even to his seat. I would lay my case before him and fill my mouth with arguments. I would know what he would answer me and understand what he says to me. Would he contend with me in the greatness of his power? No, he would pay attention to me. There an upright man could argue with him, and I would be acquitted forever by my judge. What does Job want? What does he want? What he's calling for is he's calling for time with God. I either need to be at his throne or I wish he'd come on down so we could just talk this through. Because I guarantee you, if I could stand before him now and I could give him my case, if I could show him my resume, if I could show him what I've lost, if we could have this conversation, he would realize this is a mistake. Now, brothers and sisters, until this moment, Job, for the most part, has done what is natural and right. He has continued to honor God. He's gone a little too far into the sadness, but hey, when you've lost your kids, your health, your wealth, I could understand that. At this moment, though, what is he basically saying in a very kind way? God's wrong. What he's basically saying is God made a mistake here. I love him, I trust him, he's been good to me, but I think he's missing something here. And I think if I could just stand before him and explain to him what's happening, he would realize a mistake's been made. Now, brothers and sisters, let's be real here. Does Job want God to actually do that? Would any of us actually want to have a moment where we stand before God and we go, God, here's what's happening. I think you made a mistake. And then for God to go, you know what? You're right. I did. Do we ever really want that to happen? No! Why? If God can make a mistake, what does that mean? He's not perfect. He's not the God he said he is. And this, that we have put our trust and faith in, isn't worth much. God, if he is perfect like he says he is, how many mistakes can he make? Zero. I never want to stand before God and go, you know what? I was right, you were wrong. We get caught up in our singular moments. Remember when we were talking in James about how we need to focus? I reminded you, when you're in trials, focus on what? Eternity. Not the duration of the trial. You and I, when we're in pain, we get focused on today. This moment. Now. What I'm feeling. And what we forget to see is that you and I are destined to be with our Lord forever.
Amen.
Do you realize that? I mean, it just blows my mind sometimes because I can't think like that. In 625 trillion years from now, where will you be? And hopefully, in the presence of Jesus Christ in heaven, feeling all of His blessing, all of His love, and knowing none of the pain that we experience now. Now, I want us to be honest. When we're 625 trillion years from this day today, how many of you are going to be, do you remember March 12th of 2016? God, can we talk about that day? Because that day was a bad day. And you know, I'm still a little upset about how bad it went. I don't think so. I think in 625 trillion years, yesterday, probably not going to be that big of a thing anymore to us. That terrible moment's going to have kind of disappeared. And you know what's cool? God gives us glimpses of this. Have you ever gone through a yearbook of high school? And have you ever flipped through the pages and you're like, oh my gosh, that person. I remember we got into a fight and it was such a big deal. And then now you're like, it was the stupidest fight ever. Like, I don't even know why we fought about that. Or you look back at like what your major strifes of sophomore year were, and you're like, wouldn't even be a blip on the radar anymore. If that happened to me today, I wouldn't even remember it by the end of the day. Why? Perspective changes. Now, I think this is brilliant, and I want you to pay attention to this, because this is the truth of many matters. Often you and I ask for things, and the last thing we want is what we ask for. So let me give you the best example I've ever seen. Hell. There are so many people that think hell is unbelievably unfair if it exists to them. Because they go, so just because I didn't go to church, and just because I didn't know God, I have to burn forever? That doesn't seem very fair. Well, go back and think about the logic here. If throughout your entire life you lived in such a way that said, God, leave me alone. God, I don't want you. God, I don't want you to be anywhere near me. Why is it so shocking that where you end up is a place where God isn't? Is it really that rude? Is it really that mean of God to do that? No, He's actually giving you what? Exactly what you asked for. The problem is you just didn't realize what you were asking for. You didn't realize what you wanted was really a bad decision. And so what you're mad at is not that God has given it to you, but that once you have it, it's not what you thought it would be. And you know what? That happens with a lot of things. I've had that happen with jobs. I've had that happen with relationships. I've had that happen with money. But you put your hope, your trust, and your joy into the attainment of something. And then you get it, and you know what you find? Not that great. In fact, a lot of the things I was feeling before, I still feel. Because they weren't problems that came from lacking things. They were problems because of my heart. Now, bear with me. We're going to go a little bit long today, but let's just flip over to verse... Where are we? Go to chapter 38. Chapter 38. What has Job been calling for 30-some chapters? An audience with God. If I could just talk to Him, he'd see a mistake had happened. Verse 38. Or chapter 38, verse 1. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said. What, I love that. So first you're like, cool. The Lord answered. Out of where? The whirlwind. Is that how you want God to show up to talk to you? Is that how you want that conversation to start? Where is God? Oh, and the tornado coming my way. There is God. Is that conversation going to go well? Probably not. So here you are, Job. You've been asking for God. You've been wanting to sit in front of Him. You wanted to see His power. You wanted to plead your case. Well, here you go. And I love what God says. Look at verse 2. Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Dress for action like a man. I will question you and make it known to me. Man up. You want to talk, son? Time to talk. Now what's funny is, Job's not going to get to talk a lot. What you will see here, look at verse 4. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? Or what were its bases sunken? Or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? What is God doing? He's asking questions. Now, are these questions that Job's actually supposed to answer? No, these are rhetorical questions that we know the answer to. And the answer is, Job doesn't know. Now just kind of scan here throughout the verses, and here's what you're going to keep seeing. Or who shut in the sea with the doors? Have you commanded the morning since your days began? Have you entered into the springs of the sea or walked in the recesses of the depth? Have the gates of death been revealed to you? Have you comprehended the expanse of the earth? Where is the way of the dwelling of the light, and where is the place of darkness? Have you entered the storehouses of the snow? Has the rain a father? And if you just keep flipping for a few chapters here, up until chapter 40, God's just asking really hard questions. But I love chapter 40, verse 3, because look what Job does. So about halfway into this, he's like, okay, I get it. What's God doing? God's explaining to him, son, I'm dad. You're a child. My amount of knowledge and understanding are so far beyond yours, you can't even comprehend the world I live in. You just don't get it. And let's be honest, is that always an easy place to be? No. You know where my son got me this week? My son asked me, Dad, why do you go to work every day? And you know what I could see? And I was like, why would you choose Monday through Friday from morning till 5 o'clock at night not to be with us? Mommy stays home with us. Why would you not be here every day? And then he asked me, well, why don't you make an office at home instead of me having to go to the office? And you know what I realized? I just couldn't explain it to him. Just couldn't explain that, well, Daddy has to go work to get money so that we can live and have food and go through life. He's just not going to get that. Not at this age. And you know what? That's how God is with us, but to infinity. Brothers and sisters, He is playing a different game. I mean, do you realize right now at this moment, God is hearing the thought of every single person in the entire universe? Do you realize right now God is probably having a billion conversations with His children? And while doing that is keeping the earth spinning, the sun rising and moving, oxygen for us to breathe, all these things He is doing and controlling. Do you and I truly understand His world? No. And so Job, about halfway through this conversation, in verse 3 says, then Job answered the Lord and said, behold, I am of small account. What shall I answer you? I have spoken once, and I will not answer twice, but I will proceed no further. So what is he saying? Uncle, you win. I'm tapping out. I get it. I shouldn't have questioned you, God. Now, where I realize that my dad is a little bit like God here, is does God stop with the conversation right now? No. And I say that because I remember many times as a child with my father where I realized about 30 minutes in, I had lost, I had messed up, and I needed to say I was sorry. And I was hoping once I did those things that what would happen is we would hug it out and the conversation would be over. But typically what happened is we went into phase two of the conversation. And so look at what the Lord says in verse 6. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind, still in the whirlwind, dress for action like a man. What is he saying? Man up, we ain't done yet. And for the next couple chapters, what will continue? He will continue to ask these questions. And in verse 42, we'll see this from Job. Or chapter 42, verse 1. Then Job answered the Lord and said, I know that you can do all things, and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted. Who is this that hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore I have uttered what I did not understand, things too wonderful for me which I did not know. Hear, and I will speak. I will question you, and you will make it known to me. I had heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eyes see you. Therefore I despise myself and repent in dust and ashes. I love when he says that. I had heard of you before, but now my eyes see you. Now, brothers and sisters, there's a couple things I want to look at here that are kind of actually scary about this book. The first is, good people suffer, and sometimes a lot. Good people suffer, and sometimes a lot. You'll notice in all that God said, he just asked questions. Did he ever give an answer? Job never gets a moment where God goes, okay, Job, let me talk to you. So here's why we did this. The reason I allowed this to happen for you is because of these six things that are actually going to occur that are good that happened because of this strife. Does he explain to him that we'd actually read about Job for thousands of years after his life, and that Job would become a beacon of hope for millions, if not billions, of people who have suffered? No. Does God give any explanation as to why? No. And so in Job, what we see is two very scary but real things. One, good people suffer, and sometimes a lot. And two, sometimes we just don't know why. Sometimes we just don't know why. And we have to be okay with that. That's why, brothers and sisters, when I talk to people who want to become Christians, one of the things I always stress is this isn't just about you acknowledging Jesus Christ as your Savior. This is about you acknowledging Him as your Lord. And when Jesus is your Lord, what that means is He is the Master. He's driving. He's leading the way. And what that means is sometimes you won't understand the full big picture. Sometimes you will be given a little task to do and you won't see how it fits into the big picture. And when He's our Master, that's okay. And it would be great if we could always sit down and any time we went through something bad, sit there and go, here's why this happened. But life just isn't that neat. And so that's why we go back to what we learned in James. Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love Him. Brothers and sisters, here's all that life is about. It's about a relationship between you and God. That's it. That's all it is. It's not about money. It's not about health. It's not about anything other than that relationship. And so whether good times or bad, your focus should be on that relationship. We get caught up in trying to understand why things happen, and we just have to come to peace that we won't know why. Sometimes you just won't know why. And you know why I found peace in this? Is because I've learned in life sometimes you do get the answer, but it's so far from the moment. Here are those vision moments where you look back and you realize how good something bad was in your life. I've had these moments in my life where in the moment I thought they were terrible. They were derailing me, they were causing me pain, they were causing me hurt. I hated them. And then years later I look back at those moments and I go, man, I'm so glad God put me through that. If I had never faced that then, I wouldn't be who I am right now. When He's our Master, we just have to have faith. There's a reason why, and He will work it out for good. And so, brothers and sisters, when you're in trial, there's only one place to look, and that's to Him. Amen. Just look to Him. Don't focus on what's happening. Don't focus on how much it hurts. Don't focus on if it's fair or not. Just focus on how in that moment can you get closer to your Father? How in that moment can you have that aha moment where Job goes, I'd heard about you, Lord, but now I see you. Make that your focus, to be with God and to see Him. Maria is going to come up now and lead us in a song. As we're doing that, I just want you guys to go ahead and stand with me. Just have a few moments of quiet prayer with you and the Lord. Some of you I know are going through your trials right now. And so in those trials, be asking God to make Himself present. Others of you, you know someone who's in trial. And so pray to be those comforters that can be in their life to give them support and to give them love. Let's just take a few moments to pray. It is such an honor to worship with you guys and spend this time with you. I hope you guys have a great week. Be sure to congratulate the Cavassos. What, 50 years, Sandra? 50-year wedding anniversary. But throughout the whole family. 15, did you ask something?
I'm from the Bossier area in Louisiana, and I know y'all have seen on the news that our hometown is a disaster right now with all the flooding. So I'd ask for everybody to pray for our family and friends there that lost their homes. And
absolutely.
We're right in the middle of all that.
Absolutely. We'll keep them in prayer.
All right.
Folks, just as you go out, have a great week and know that you can show people in your words and actions you love God, you love people, and that you follow Jesus. Have a blessed week.
One word.